Today's reading is John chapter 11, verses 17 to 44, and it's on page 1078. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know, he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she told him. "I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who was to come into the world." And after she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days." Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go."
Happy Mother's Day. But as Alex said earlier, it can be a little bit weird that as we have a day of celebration, remembering our mothers, we're thinking about this topic of suffering. And so over the past week, as I've been preparing for this, thinking, actually, have we got the wrong day for this kind of topic? Shouldn't this be a time when we can celebrate? And yet, as we've mentioned, as I thought about it some more, maybe it's actually quite appropriate. Because even though Mother's Day is called to be a day of celebration, for many people, the fact that it is Mother's Day, a time to remember our mothers, can actually make it a day of suffering. Maybe for some, a day of suffering because it's a time when we remember someone who's not with us anymore. Maybe for some, it's a day of suffering because it's another reminder that you're not a mother. And society and culture around us seems to have caught up with this a little bit. I don't know if you notice, you probably don't check all the emails from shops that come in every single day. But so often now, in the weeks leading up to Mother's Day, the emails come in giving you an opt-out from any kind of Mother's Day promotion because they realise the hurt that those reminders can be to people. Mother's Day, for many, isn't the celebration that we would like it to be. And as we're all too aware, it's not just Mother's Day that can cause suffering for us. So easy to look around the world and see the immense suffering that is currently happening. We all are aware of the continued war and conflict in Ukraine and the many, many innocent people who have lost their lives or who have been affected by it. Or recently, the earthquake in Turkey and Syria. And again, the many people who have either lost lives or those who have continued to be suffering from it, and the dangers that a watching world stops watching and we move on with our lives, and yet there are people still suffering from the events there. Or if we are to look closer to home and the things that are affecting us as a society, as a nation, the ongoing cost of living crisis. Or maybe as we come even closer to home, maybe for you there is a personal suffering that actually no one else knows about. An anxiety, a loneliness, a mourning of a loved one. So what are we to make of it? As we think of this question, is there any meaning in a world so full of suffering? How can I deal with suffering? How can I get through this? I wonder, as we start then, I wonder how you would answer that question right now. And so this evening, we're going to think very simply of two things. We're going to think, what does the world say as we approach this subject of suffering? And then what does Jesus say? And there's an outline on the back of the notice sheet you were given that just shows you where we're going, or alternatively, how long we've got left, if you're that way inclined. But let's look at those two things as we think, what does the world say? And then what does Jesus say? So first, what does the world say? And as we come to ask what the world says, sadly, it doesn't seem to have much to offer. If we're to take a secular worldview, as we're told we should be taking more and more in society, and certainly the Western world, well, when it comes to the question of suffering, well, there is no explanation. There is no meaning. There's just nothing to offer. What's the meaning in suffering? Nothing. Here's what prominent atheist Richard Dawkins said. He says, "The total amount of suffering per year in the natural world is beyond all decent contemplation. In a universe of electrons and selfish genes, blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt, other people are going to get lucky, and you won't find any rhyme or reason in it, nor any justice. The universe that we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is, at bottom, no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but pitiless indifference." Or take another atheist, Christopher Hitchens, as he responds to his own suffering. Hitchens, you may have heard of, was an author, was a journalist, who wrote a lot in opposition to any kind of religious faith or belief. He died in 2011 from throat cancer. In 2010, he wrote about his suffering, and in it he says, "To the dumb question, why me, the cosmos barely bothers to return the reply, why not? It's just the way it is," the secular worldview says. That's life. There's no purpose in it. There's no meaning in it. Suffering isn't even wrong. It's just life. And if you're anything like me, I hear that and I want to go, no, that's not good enough. That's not satisfying enough for me. We want to do more to prevent it. We want to do more to respond to it. In fact, when we go through suffering, we don't just want to say it hurts. We want to say it's wrong. And yet, if we go with what we're told we should be going with the secular worldview, the response we're given is, no, there's just no rhyme or reason. It just is. And yet, something inside of us longs for something more than just that. So what does Christianity make of suffering? Or to be more precise, what does the central figure of Christianity, the man Jesus, who claims to be God become man, what does he make of suffering? What does Jesus say? Well, we just had read to us a true story from the Bible, from the book of John. John was one of Jesus' closest friends, and he writes an eyewitness account, a biography of this man Jesus' life. And in this section, in John chapter 11, we meet a family, two sisters and a brother. The brother Lazarus is severely sick and dies. Two sisters, Mary and Martha, are grieving the death of their brother. Jesus is a family friend, and he's told the news, and he's on the way to see them. And so we're going to have a look at the reaction of Jesus to these two sisters. And I wonder if you noticed during the reading that when the sisters meet Jesus, they ask him, they say exactly the same thing to him. Verse 21 and verse 32. They both say, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. They know some of the things that Jesus has already done in his life, and they think, if only you had come earlier. And whilst hearing the same thing from each of the sisters, we see very different responses from Jesus. Responses that, as we look at, we'll see how Jesus responds and his attitude towards suffering. And as we do that, can I put it to you that the response we see in Jesus is a much more satisfying and a much more attractive response to the answer to the question of suffering than any other worldview out there. So let's have a look at these three things. Here's the first. We see that Jesus cares about suffering. Jesus cares about suffering. We see this in his encounter with Mary in verses 32 to 38. Let me read those verses. Let me read those sentences. And as I do, notice the words that are used to describe how Jesus reacts or his attitude. From verse 32 at the bottom of the left-hand page. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Did you notice the words, the descriptions? Jesus is deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Jesus weeps. Jesus cared deeply about the death of this man and the suffering and pain that the people are going through. This word, deeply moved, it means to be sick to the pit of your stomach. It carries this sense of indignation, a sense of injustice, a sense that it is not meant to be this way. So what does God, as he enters this world in the man Jesus, what does he see as he enters a world of suffering? He says, it should not be like this. This is not the world that I intended. Grief, loneliness, poverty, anxiety, disease. Jesus looks at it and says, these are imposters in my world. So important when we're walking with someone who is suffering to be able to say, this is wrong. And the Christian worldview affirms that. Jesus' reaction here shows that suffering is wrong. It's not meaningless. It is wrong. Jesus cares about suffering. Second, we see that Jesus enters into suffering. Because as many of us will know, I'm sure, when we are suffering, to have someone who comes alongside us, who weeps with us, who shows us solidarity, is incredibly powerful. It shows that we're not alone. Do you notice how Jesus reacts to Mary when Mary comes to Jesus weeping, Jesus weeps with her. If we come to Jesus weeping, Jesus weeps with us. Jesus himself comes alongside us in our pain. He comes to be near us in the midst of our suffering. It's a wonderful comfort because Jesus knows what it is to suffer. You see, it's amazing to have someone come alongside you. But maybe it is even more amazing when that person is able to say, I know what you're going through. I've been there. Rio Ferdinand is a former England footballer, and he wrote a book called Thinking Out Loud, where he speaks of his experience in losing his wife to cancer. And in the book, he speaks of one experience when they're in the hospital and a counsellor walks in to the room to help them. And his wife, Rebecca, looks at the counsellor and says, tell me this, have you ever lost someone close to you? And the counsellor replies, saying, well, no, I can't say I have, but I have been trained. And Rebecca tells the counsellor to leave, and once she's left the room, Rebecca turns to Rio and says, what on earth does she know? She's never had to live through anything like this. Now, I'm not saying that there's no place for counsellors. They can and they do a wonderfully important role. And I'm not saying that we can't draw alongside someone if we've not experienced exactly what they've experienced. It's still so important. But there's nothing quite like someone walking alongside us who has been through what we've been through, who knows what we're going through. Jesus is not a God who offers empty platitudes of comfort from a distant throne in heaven, removed from the mess and the pain of this world. No, he's a God who is no stranger to suffering. In fact, the Bible calls him the man of sorrows. We have one who knows what it is to suffer. And so through these biographies of Jesus' life, we see that. In his life, Jesus experienced family arguments. He experienced mental anguish. He experienced in his early years life on the run as a refugee. He experienced, as we see here, bereavement of someone he loves. He experienced betrayal by one of his best friends. He experienced the failure of friends at his greatest need. He was ignored by the people he came to help. And then finally, he endured such physical pain when only in his early 30s he was unjustly tried, he was wrongly convicted, and he was nailed to a cross of wood to die a cruel and a painful death. A death that wasn't just experiencing physical torment, but more than that was experiencing emotional torture as he was separated from his father, who he had known and had enjoyed relationship forever. Whatever it is, he gets it. He gets you. He enters into suffering. It's been said that the Christian God is the only God who has scars, who can uniquely walk alongside us in our pain and say to us, I know what you are going through. Let me walk with you. Let me carry you. And so when you cry out alone in the bitter watches of the night, when you're crippled with fear or anxiety, when you're derailed by some unexpected tragedy, when you experience a loss, a heartache, a pain, there is a personal God who draws alongside you, who whispers, I know, you are not alone. Jesus enters into suffering. And then finally we see how Jesus provides hope beyond suffering. During lockdown, like many people, my wife Rosie experienced my wife Rosie's mental health suffered. And she was chatting to a friend during it who messaged her to say, it's not forever. And I realise as I say that, there may be people here who go, no, that's not a helpful thing to hear because we don't know that. And yet what Rosie's friend knew was the hope that Jesus offers. She knows that because of Jesus, our suffering does have an expiry date. Have a look down at Martha's encounter with Jesus. In verse 20, she comes to Jesus, and Jesus responds by speaking words of hope to her. Verse 25, Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies. Whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Jesus says, I have power over death. I can deal with it. I can give life. And so these words are an incredible hope in the midst of suffering. He can do something about it. He has power over death. And these words aren't empty words with no meaning. No, do you remember what he went on to do? He heads over to the tomb where Lazarus' body has been lying for 4 days, and he tells them to move the stone away from the tomb. And the people question what he's going through, wonder if he's been overcome with grief, and yet he says, no, move the stone away from the tomb. And then verse 43, he calls out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. And what happens? Well, John records it so simply, yet so clearly. The dead man came out. The dead man came out. It's almost an irony. This man is meant to be dead, and yet he just walks out. And later on in his life, or later on in his death, I guess, after he was killed on a cross of wood, he comes back to life again. He proves he has power over death itself. He proves that he is the resurrection and the life. And so he offers every single person who believes in him life after death. Jesus can do something about suffering. It's not forever. And so, as Mike said, whilst we may face suffering in our lives, whilst we will face death, we need not fear it. Because for the Christian believer, there is a place where suffering is no more. A place, the Bible says, in the last book, he will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. A place where, in the words of Samwise Gamgee, everything sad will come untrue. Jesus provides hope beyond suffering. Yesterday, I went to the Thanksgiving service or funeral of someone I know called Pete. Pete was 30 years old. He went out one evening to play basketball, and during the game, he collapsed and died of a heart attack. Pete was due to get married next week. I honestly think yesterday was one of the saddest occasions I've ever been to. And yet at the same time, I honestly think yesterday was one of the most hope-filled occasions I've ever been to. Pete's a Christian. We looked at these same verses yesterday, which was helpful for today. Pete, like Lazarus, had two sisters, and they both gave an incredible tribute to Pete. And they finished by saying how when Jesus walked on this earth, he was speaking to two grieving sisters. And he said to them, your brother will rise again. I am the resurrection and the life. And then they said, we believe Jesus is speaking that to us, two grieving sisters, right now. You see, the secular worldview looks into that church yesterday, and all it can do is shrug its shoulders and say, that's life. And yet Jesus looks into that church and says, no, that's wrong. Jesus weeps with Pete's family and friends as they suffer. And Jesus wonderfully offers hope beyond suffering. Hope of a place where there is no more suffering where Pete is right now. Hope to the suffering that Pete's family and friends are going through right now. So when you experience suffering, or when you look at the world around us going through suffering, where will it lead you? Jesus offers meaning and hope in a world of suffering. Why don't we take a few moments quiet and just reflect on what we've seen from Jesus in this story with Lazarus and his sisters, and then Rob will come back up to continue our service in a moment.
Thank you. Do take a seat. Are we going to invite Woody up to grill him? Woody, thank you very much for what you had to say, and thank you all for putting in the questions. A lot of appreciation for Mike, so thank you for that. Let's start with just a nice simple one. Why does God allow suffering?
Thank you. It's in one sense the obvious question that comes out. And I think there's lots of ways we could look at this question and think about answering it. So let me briefly give a few, and if it doesn't satisfy you, come and chat to me more. I think it's worth saying that removing God out of the equation doesn't remove the reality of suffering. And so there is a challenge to say, if we were to turn away from God when it comes to suffering, what are we going to turn to? And I guess what I want to show from John chapter 11 is it's worth turning to God in the midst of suffering. Someone who knows it, who calls it out as wrong, and weeps with you. Why does it happen? Again, as we saw in John 11, it wasn't meant to be this way. And so God created a world that is good, and he wants it good. And yet, we can look at a lot of the suffering, probably the vast majority of the suffering, and see ourselves as humanity as culprits of the suffering that's caused on other people. Which could beg the question then, why doesn't God now do something about the suffering? Which then leads to the question, well, how is he going to do that and get rid of all the people that cause it? I don't want to say that, because it causes me to look in the mirror and realize that I'm guilty of causing suffering at times. So I think it's helpful to look in the mirror and realize, see the suffering that's caused by humanity. That doesn't answer the whole question, though. And so I wonder if there is a reality of going, Jesus can use suffering in ways that we don't understand often. And so I take Mike as a really great example that we heard, who at first would not want to have gone through that experience of cancer and treatment, and yet now can look back and go, thank God for that, because it helped bring me back to him. C.S. Lewis, the author of the Chronicles of Narnia and a few other books, talked about suffering in this way. He said, pain insists upon being attended to. God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks to us in our consciences, but shouts to us in our pains. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. And I wonder if there is something that in our suffering makes us ask those questions and can turn us to a God who can help us in the midst of our suffering. There's a few thoughts. Do come and grab me.
Yeah. Woody will be on the door at the end, so do grab him. And there's a chance Woody will be also in Connect, which is if you're 18 to mid-30-ish. Do go to that, where you'll be thinking a bit more about that, I believe. There's a question here. It sounds that it's coming from someone facing some difficulty, or who has at least faced difficulty in the past. that they write, every time someone tells me that suffering isn't forever, I just think, well, let's get it over with. How do I get around these bad thoughts?
Yeah. Two things, maybe, that's maybe helpful. One, as hard as it can be, look to Jesus, who wants to walk with you in your suffering, who doesn't at any point in the Bible say, just get it over with, but actually says, look, keep going. Let me walk with you. Let me carry you through this suffering. So look to him and look to other people. As hard as it can be, can you speak to other people who can walk that path with you, who can suffer with you in some respect? So talk to people if you're having these thoughts, but also talk to people as you go through your suffering. Don't suffer alone, but do speak to other people. There's so much more, but I think that second one is so important, that there are people around who love you, who care for you, who want to suffer with you. And so please do not suffer alone. Please do chat to and speak to other people to help you.
Thank you. And just practically on that, I think if this may be completely reading the wrong thing into this, but if that question is coming from a place where someone is thinking, I just want it over with, please just reiterate what Woody's saying. Please do speak to me, to him, or if you'd rather, Caroline, I think, Caroline, where have you gone? Caroline, we saw earlier, our Assistant Minister for Women's and Children's Work. Please do chat to her. I'd be very, very happy to chat to you, but just to reiterate that. I think we're coming into land, so just one more question, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. The question was asked, questions have moved around, so I apologise that I haven't got to them all, but I want to be kind to Woody and not spring one on him that he wasn't expecting. Jesus was angry, you said, then why did he bring Lazarus back?
Yeah, if that's your question, do come and speak to me, because I'm not quite sure I get it. I think Jesus was angry at suffering in the sense of suffering is wrong, and so as he looks at the world around him, suffering is wrong, but not angry at Lazarus or not angry at Mary and Martha. There's no kind of blame attached to the suffering that's going on. I think what's really interesting in this account in John chapter 11 is at the start of the chapter, we hear that Jesus goes with the intention of raising Lazarus from the dead, to which then we could read Jesus weeping and going, is it really heartfelt? He knows what he's going to do. And yet I think that shows how much it did deeply trouble him to see those around him affected by it, to be affected himself, and yet has power over it to do something about it. So sees that suffering is wrong and can do something about it is a wonderful combination in someone. We can all see suffering is wrong and yet not have the power to do something about it. Here is one who sees suffering is wrong and has the power to do something about it.
Thank you. Do carry on chatting to Woody. He'll be on the door. He'll be here all night. So do keep asking your questions. But thank you very much. There'll be plenty of chance in the coming weeks as well to ask questions. So please do keep doing.